I am recording the meeting. I should be sharing my screen of the agenda. So this is the, Netherland Fire Protection District Board of Directors regular meeting on January the 6th, 2021. This meeting is being recorded. Starting with roll call, Ian Irwin Powell, I am present. Patrick Richardson.
Present.
Todd Weisler.
Present.
Ray Willis.
Present.
Henry Zerberg.
Yes.
And Chief Durr.
Present.
Good evening, Chief.
Good evening.
So we have board quorum. I'll call this meeting to order at 19:01. I sent out an updated agenda and I posted the agenda last night on the website. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda? I haven't made any changes since last night. So it is as is, so making a motion to approve the agenda for this evening's meeting.
I second that motion.
And Todd?
I agree.
Patrick?
Aye.
And Ray?
Yes.
Okay. On the weekend, I sent you out the minutes for the December meetings. Did anybody have any comments about those? Okay, I'm going to make a motion to approve those minutes and put them into the record then.
Second.
And Todd? Todd, are you muted?
Well, I'll vote yes.
Is that Ray?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, I approve.
Okay. And then Henry?
Yes, I'm good with that. On a note, I was not, I think I missed a meeting on December 16th, so I cannot approve those meeting minutes. Just have to stand on that.
Okay. Let me just quickly note that. Okay. So before we get into the board business, are there any public on the meeting who would like to make a comment or statement? Just checking I'm not missing anybody in the waiting room. I am not. Okay. On that note, we'll move on to the treasurer's report. So hand it over to you, Todd.
Okay. Could you pull it up? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So the first, we'll go over the balance sheet. Of course, this is year end set of numbers, and let me know if I drop in and out because my connection has been really poor tonight. So just let me know if I'm dropping in and out.
Yep.
Okay. There is some small amounts that will come in, and there will be some small adjustments. Kathy does. Round up some of the invoices that were input this year. So she would adjust the 2020 books based on, you know, some of those late inputs. But this tells us kind of where we stand at the end of 2020. In our total funds, we have 348 $49,000 basically. And then I want to break down how these reserves have been modified based on, you know, our purchase of the tender and our adjustment for the sick and vacation payouts at the end of 2020. So as we had discussed and agreed, the capital reserve has been, we basically reduced that reserve amount by, you know, about $18,000 that we've brought that reserve down. And then of course the reserve for water systems we've eliminated. And of course, because that money, that reserved amount is not needed anymore. And then for sick and vacation pay, based on the most recent calculations, we're now reserving $62,938 to cover our outstanding sick and vacation that we have carrying forward in 2021. And the payout will be reflected in our income and expense statement for December. The other thing I'd like to point out, basically our total reserve is $239,226. And then I'd like to point out that, you know, we have an accounts receivable outstanding of $70,000 for wildland reimbursements. We're expecting to, you know, that was invoiced in 2020. So it'll show up in our 2020 books, but of course, the cash will hit our bank in 2021. But we're recording it here in our 2020 statement. And then expenses not paid, $18,604. And so our total unreserved funds are $161,881. And of course, that $70,000 is probably going to hit our books. Not hit our books, but hit our bank, probably in 2021. Is there any questions around these numbers?
Todd, it's Rick.
Yeah.
Hey, for year end, as I recall, that LIFEPAC defibrillator grant was $28,800, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Would it be okay if we increased that grant match reserve by $3,800? Just so that that's all clear, then once we pay that?
Reserve are you talking about that we would need to increase?
The grant match reserve.
The grant match reserve?
Yeah, that's at 25. And I don't know that it makes a huge difference other than we would pull that out of operating as opposed to unreserved funds.
Yeah.
So that would at least be my suggestion.
Okay, I think I was waiting until we could close out December from Kathy and then get a better idea of where we stand at year end, because I believe we're gonna have a small budget surplus or some budget surplus that we'll need to decide how we're gonna divide that up into reserves and what we're gonna do with that. But
okay.
I have no issue with updating that grant match reserve to 28,800. Just so that we know the money's there, we've got to put it aside anyway. So it was in my on my agenda.
Yeah, and realistically, it's, you know, going to show up as an expense next year. You know, an expense that we don't really have budgeted. You know, so yeah, I mean, whether we set a reserve up for it or not, that's, you know, I guess. I don't know if that's really critical for us to do, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
But, you know, it's going to hit our books next year, though, that expense.
That's true.
At 28,800. Yeah.
This year. It's going to hit it this year.
Oh, say that again, Ian.
It'll definitely hit our books this year.
So we're buying them. I thought we were not going to realize the expense until next year on those life packs.
So we'll realize the expense in 2021.
Yeah, right. That's what I was in.
Just creating confusion. I apologize.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on to income. You know, on the income front, we were $9,000 over budget for December, and 21.7 for the year to date. We had other income in December of $101,000, mostly due to wildland fire reimbursement. And again, I note that there's $70,000 of that is a receivable that's going to be cash in next year's. We'll receive the cash next year, I should say, but it's booked this year. And then expense-wise, we were about $16,000 overspent versus the budget planned for December. We were overspent $25,000 year to date. And that overspend was primarily due to that sick and vacation payout that we all agreed that we would execute in December. And then other expenses, $64,000 overspent. Of course, that was primarily due to the purchase of the new tender. So that's basically what our expenses came to in December. But year to date, if we want to go on to the next summary, year-end summary, I mean, it's really pretty good. We end up with a year-end budget surplus of $65,000. And how that all breaks down is we basically had $21,000 of additional property tax income, or income in general. We were overspent by $25,000. We were also overspent in other expenses, for grant, you know, other expenses, grants, wildfire support, the tender purchase. But we initially planned $120,000 of reserve funds, or funds that were not, you know, basically in our business execution budget, but were actually for other expenses in 2020. So coming out of that, if you add all that up, we're $65,000 to the plus for the year. And so that $65,000 will be carried over into 2021 as retained earnings. And Kathy will take care of that. And then, as Ian said, we'll have to figure out how we disperse that.
Yeah, and that number will change slightly, but it should be somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Well, that's going to be our operating capital for the first 3 months, isn't it?
Well, we have the reserve set up also of, I think it's $100,000. Can you go back to the first slide, Ian?
I can. Oh, it's just on there, isn't it?
I can actually look on my computer here too.
So there's the $106,000 for $107,000 for payroll and operating that's reserved.
No. Okay.
Because we have these funds in the bank, and that reserve was set up to cover those first couple months in the coming year.
It does get thinner.
I think we're financially. Sorry, Ray, go ahead.
I said it does get thin on us this time of year.
Yes. But I think the plan is solid. I think we're coming out of the year with pretty solid footing, and looks pretty good financially.
It appears we did better than what I thought we were going to do.
Yeah, me too.
There was a few scary moments.
Yeah.
But we got a lot accomplished and came out of the year okay. So that's all good news.
It's great news.
Okay, I think that wraps it up unless somebody has a question.
Nothing from me. Anybody else?
Nope, I'm good with it as well. Nice work, Todd.
Yeah, I'm good now.
Okay. So moving on to Chief Support. Over to you, Chief. I can pull over some of the stuff you sent me earlier.
That'd be great. I was hoping I didn't pop quiz you, but if you can pull up that incident type period comparison. Yep, lovely. And let's go to page two, and then we'll come back to that.
Okay, and then I've got another one, a pretty graph from you as well. So.
Yeah, pictures. Numbers are always a bit approximate at this point. When we go to pull end of year statistics, we're like, oh, that call doesn't quite look right, et cetera. But in short, 432 for the year. So we're three down from last year, a handful up from 18, and 20 up from 2017. If you look at the numbers and distribution, the way that we code some of the unattended campfires versus illegal burns versus wildland fires, sometimes something might land in a particular category. And so you see that unauthorized burning, we had 27 in 2020, but we only had four last year. But if we roll up to that first page, I believe there's abandoned campfires. Somewhere around line item. You'll see the 140 series is all miscellaneous fires. So sometimes those things dance around in there a bit. But overall, 2020 looked a lot like 2019, 18, et cetera. Any questions I can answer for anybody on just the call summary and statistics?
I have a quick one.
Yeah.
Jim sent an email where he kind of summarized all of this, and it had good intent calls. Was that basically smoke reports and attending campfires?
So there's a smoke scare category, and I believe that's on page two. And so good intent, frankly, is anything that isn't, so it isn't normally the smoke scares, but it's something that we get called on to, we respond to, and there's no problem found.
Ironically, and just being turned to an illegal campfire now.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm on duty, so I'm going to sum this up really quick. We had one CPR. We also had an unattended death that we responded to. Charlie did a great job on the awards dinner. I worked a bunch on Big Springs egress. We're working on a paramedic backfill program to take care of some of our staff that's either vacation or sick. Working on a lot of internal policy and Big Springs egress, lots of meetings with town and Forest Service, and more to forthcome. And that would summarize my chief's report.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Appreciate it. And as you see, we're going to drop off now, but this was the graph that Chief sent me earlier today that just basically lays out the numbers there in a sort of more readable form.
Yeah, I like that graph. It's good.
So as you can see, this is hence my question about the good intent call, because there's a lot of them.
Yeah, I had the same question. I'm glad you asked it.
And that could be good intent, can be a passerby calling in someone sitting on the side of the road and they're concerned about their welfare, you know?
Yeah. It's something that doesn't really have a category that still generates a call to the holding place for other things. Okay. Moving on to old business, new tender update. Patrick, what have you got for us on that at the moment?
So I spoke to the folks at Fire Trucks Unlimited yesterday and conveyed a little bit of unhappiness with the lack of communication. Mm-hmm. although they certainly have been out over the holidays, and I guess they've got a few folks out sick with either COVID or something or other, I'm not sure. But regardless, what I didn't understand is when we purchased that truck, they actually go through and do a complete pump service, pump test, and then DOT inspection, and it's ready for the road. But they also have sold other trucks that were slated for shop time ahead of ours. Okay. And so it sounds as though in their planning meeting yesterday, the day before, the truck should be in their shop middle of next week.
Okay.
And so I let them know that I would be calling them Friday of next week to check in the progress.
Good. As long as you're staying on them. Can you just give me 1 second? My radio's out in the other room. I just need to get a silencer. Apologies, back again.
And so, whomever is going to go out and pick up the water tender, I would certainly be happy to give that person or persons our inspection report that we do when we go pick up new fire apparatus, which obviously is a road test, fully loaded, braking, driving, handling, steering. You'll have one of their EVTs there walk through a basic, their DOT inspection, and then they need to have a water source there so that our crew picking it up can actually draft it and do a shortened pump test. They will provide all the actual pump test documentation there to have that done before they arrive. But like I said, we do it to trucks that are brand new from the factory at Pierce. We actually draft them even though they've passed all the Pierce tests. We go out and make sure and verify with our own eyes that this is indeed what we're paying for. So I would encourage whomever's going out there to do exactly that and plan on spending a full day there at the shop. Yeah. Going through that truck front to back.
Okay, so we're looking possibly the week beginning the 18th then.
Yeah, like I said, I'll stay in touch with you, but I will be calling them again Friday of next week.
Okay. So the plan was that Charlie and myself were going to go and pick that up last week or this week. I can't remember which, but obviously it's not ready. So that plan may change, but we'll see how that works out. Any questions about the tender timelines? Any other things you'd like to know about it? Okay. Last month we had a lengthy talk about wildland fire pay. And I sent you all an email from Ryan that explained the whole situation. So based on part of that email, I'd just like to put on the record that now we understand the process, which I think perhaps either we didn't know or had forgotten. And it's my understanding that all of the paperwork was in on time. Ryan processed the paperwork as soon as he got it. The problem is sometimes it gets held up in the system, and it was just an unusual year of big fires and big expenses, particularly on fires, because unusually people were having to pay for hotel bills. So that's where we ended up with that rather large outgoing in November, I believe it was. So the system was actually working exactly as it should. We may still need to discuss if we're gonna have a lot of people out on deployments, making sure that we have a reserve to pay for that, or making sure that we know how much we are looking to pay out for, and just keep track of that. And that's probably a little bit on us to keep track of that information a little bit harder. I know Ryan sends it to us as soon as he's done it. So that was just what that was about. Any questions about wildland pay? I do have an item further down that ties back into this. Okay. New business. The chief just disappeared, and he was the one who I was going to talk to about this. For new members of the board and reminders to old members of the board, there's a number of things that we have to do at the first board meeting. So the first meeting, we have to designate the posting place for the meeting, which I would motion that we make the posting place for all Netherland Fire Department public meetings. Posting place would be the website initially, and the post office as a backup in case the website is not functioning or in another emergency. And that was a motion, so I'll need a second, please.
Just question, is that the process we've used in the past, the post office as a backup?
Yes.
And have we ever had to do that?
It's always been posted at the post office.
Yeah. So
go ahead. Sorry, Enray, go ahead.
So before the beginning of last year, maybe slightly earlier, because the statute changed, you used to do paper postings in two places. So it used to be the post office and the fire station. And then they changed it so you could post on your website only, but you need to have a secondary mm-hmm. location. And the post office is the most public place, I think, for that.
And that's how it
used to be three public places. You had to have posted three public places, but like Ian said, that has changed. And the website is fine. It's a public place and the post office is fine too.
Okay. So the post office isn't really a backup. It's an addition to, right? It's a website and the post office that it's always announced at. Is that correct?
No, it's only announced on the website. Hang on, I'm reading the statute as I'm standing here. So basically, a district that posts notices on a website must still designate one physical location within the district boundaries for posting in the event of an exigent or emergency circumstance which prevents posting or public access to the online webpage.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I see your question.
So well, a nice second.
Good. Patrick?
Second.
And Henry?
Aye.
And Ray?
Yes.
Thank you. That was an easy one. Meeting times, unless anybody has any desire to change them, I'm happy with the first Wednesday at 7 p.m. each month.
I'm used to it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, yep. Okay.
Yep.
And meeting place, interestingly, currently Zoom until we have some kind of COVID resolution, but otherwise, Netherland Fire Station 1.
Second. Yes.
Aye.
Patrick.
Aye.
Yeah, maybe one day we can all meet in person. I keep hoping for that. As part of posting on our website, we have to publish our website address on the DOLA site, and it currently is not. It's not on the contact page. And these are items for the chief to correct. I don't have a DOLA login to do these. So there's a couple of chief items, which is the board of directors listed on the DOLA site is incorrect. There's currently no service plan filed. And we need to file a new transparency notice by the 15th. And I'm pretty sure he's got that all lined up because that's the same every year. But I will email him for tomorrow and make sure that gets done.
And what are they referring to as far as a service plan?
I'm not 100% sure. So when you form the district, you have to provide a service plan, which is basically what the special district will provide. Mm-hmm. So what that looks like, I'm not sure. But it should be up there, and we must have one somewhere on file. So, but it's supposed to be up there, and I just noticed it was missing the other day when I was looking at all the other pieces. Okay. Any other questions on the statutory items that we need to do? Okay. Moving on. I think I spoke about this last year, and it's not currently a problem, but I'd like to get to it before it becomes a problem. We have no cap on our sick leave accrual. And we're also going to circle back around to this in a minute in another section. So currently, our staff could accrue sick pay continuously, and if they were with the district for a long time, they may accrue a very large number of sick hours, and our policy is to pay out sick time at 50% at retirement or termination. I'd like to suggest or make the motion that we cap that. I've talked to a couple of people and around about 600 hours seems to be the sort of average cap that's placed on that. And just for information, give me one sec. We don't have any, well, we have one staff member who's close to that, about 592. Everybody else is way below that, and we wouldn't be cutting anybody off at that level. Any comments or thoughts on that?
I mean, 600 hours is a very generous amount of sick leave. I'm fine with it. I mean, I think it's deserved. So, yeah. But I also agree that it has to be capped. At some point, we cannot accrue anymore. It just becomes too big of a liability.
Yeah. I mean, we have an accrual on vacation time that we've not really previously implemented, which we're trying to do as well. So this kind of fits in with that.
Does the, I know in last November's election, there was FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act, something that was passed. Does that have any consequences to our motion of capping at 600 hours?
It does not, and I was going to get to that, but I can certainly jump to that. Give me a second.
And on vacation, is there a cap on vacation also?
Yeah, so the cap on vacation is a maximum carry forward of 1 year. So, and that would depend on how long you've been with the department. So the maximum is 312 or 320, somewhere in there.
So they can carry forward how much into the following year?
A maximum of 1 year. So that would be like, say, 320. Mm-hmm. So you would then, if you then didn't use any vacation the next year, you would still only really be able to carry over 320. Mm-hmm. We've never enforced that previously, and that was part of why we paid out a lump sum for vacation in December to reduce that liability down, so we could start saying, okay, we're going to enforce this, A, because we want you to take vacation, and B, because we don't want to sit on that liability.
And so did anybody exceed that this year at year end?
A year-end no. So what we did this year was that payout brought everybody down to take carrying over only 1 year as a max.
Okay.
And
how much do they accrue?
Depends. It depends which how you're employed. Where did you go? Give me a sec, I'll just find this.
So does it accrue per hour?
For some staff it does, for some staff it accrues per day. Okay, I got it. I knew I had this open already because I knew you were going to ask the question. So if you're ready for the complication, if you're on a 48.96, you earn a quarter day of sick leave for each full month of employment. So 3 24-hour days per year, so 72 hours. We don't do 24-hour schedules. We're going to circle back on that in a second. And then admin employees, 4 hours of sick leave for each full month of employment, so 48 hours per year. So that's the answer to the second question. The answer to the first question is the change in the law. I'll pull this email over. This is from CPS reminding us. So this doesn't affect us this year, but I do want to talk about it in a minute. So the law changed so that you must provide 1 hour of sick leave for every 30 hours worked up to 48 hours per year. And the employees must be allowed to roll over 48 hours of unused paid sick leave, which I think answers your question, Henry.
Right, and then that does not accumulate. I mean, it's just like you carry forward 48 hours, but then like you cannot carry it over year after year after year. It doesn't accumulate more than 48 hours.
That's correct, but as an employer, you can write policy that allows larger amounts than that.
Yep.
Same with vacation. So with vacation, you can write the same thing. So I still need to go and read the details of all of that, but that's basically the summary of how that works.
Well, that's great. It's same as in my company. I mean, we got the same notice, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah. While we're on this, we might as well just stay here as this is what we're talking about. So basically, this is effective from 1st of January 2021. For employers with 16 or more employees, which is not us. So we don't have to apply this until next year. I have been requested / lobbied about sick pay for part-time staff who work less than 40 hours. And they've asked if we would consider offering this from this year. Given we have to do it from next year, I'm not averse to it. It's not a huge hit on our budget. I don't think it'll create a problem for us. Any thoughts? And this really was a future business item to adopt this. There's no rush and we can look at it and do the math.
Okay.
But that's kind of something on the table. So okay, I'm going to make the motion that the department adopts the policy to cap sick leave accrual at 600 hours.
Second.
Todd? And Ray?
Yes.
And Henry?
Aye.
Thank you, gentlemen. I sent you the information for the CPS contract renewal for this year. We actually budgeted for that. There was a however. So in the in last year's contract, we had two items that we never got around to, which was the organizational review and then some compliance training. So that got rolled into this year, which is currently set outside of that budget. So we'll need to do an amendment to that later to correct for that. Unless anybody has an issue, I'd like to renew the contract with CPS. I've been working fairly closely with them. The chief has been working fairly closely with them. They've definitely provided a lot of backup to us and information. So I'd like to keep them on board for 2021.
Good. I'm kind of looking in a little bit, you know, in there from the outside, but I think from what I hear and from what I saw that I think they contributed well to the department, and they kind of acting like a buffer in a way at some point. So I don't think I have any issues with renewing the contract right now.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else?
No, I'm good with it.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that adding the human resources entity to the functioning of the departments, then it's early, but it is seeming to really have a positive impact. I think we've got to keep on this path. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. Second the motion to renew the contract of CPS.
Okay. Patrick?
Aye.
Todd?
Yes.
And Ray? Ray, do you agree with the motion to renew the contract with CPS?
You asking me?
I am.
Well, I said yes.
Just official for the record, that was all.
Yeah, I'm good with it.
Thank you. CPS make a lot of entries in our agenda this evening, I'm afraid. We had a sexual discrimination complaint filed against the department in November. It was filed with CPS. Unfortunately, one of the people who deals with our account was taken extremely ill, was in hospital for a couple of weeks, so it got missed. But they've started looking into that. They started looking into that at the end of December, doing the early inquiries with the complainant. They've come back and said they believe they need an additional 20 hours in order to complete the inquiry and come to a conclusion. Patrick, you may know more about this than I do. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
No, that's really their biggest question right now. Seems as though they are working directly with the member or members that have some sort of information. I have chosen to stay out of asking questions about this and allow CPS to do their job. So really the only question they had was how would we like to proceed? Use our monthly hourly quota that we contract or bill this separately, I think was the biggest question they had.
Yeah.
What do we expect from CPS on that end? Like, what is the deliverable from their side to our department once they're done with their questioning?
The deliverable would really be, you know, did the discrimination inquiry, did it actually happen? Is there a case here? Is there some sort of potential wrongdoing? And the next steps we should take as a department, whether it's nothing at all the way to disciplinary action. And so that would be the deliverable. Is there expertise in handling the investigation, doing it unbiasedly, and developing a plan of attack for us as far as our next steps and how to address this issue, if there is indeed an issue that needs to be addressed.
And I assume this is going to be a written report that we get back?
Yes.
All right. I mean, I am totally fine with the additional 20 hours of time spent on this.
Okay. I'm also good with the 20 hours. We get 20 hours a month from them. And I believe that we can easily fill this month with other items that we're trying to get through and sort out. So I'd like this to be an additional task that they take on.
Ian, the 20 hours we spend on them per month, is that just a minimum amount of hours we spend? We get billed for 20 hours regardless if we spend it or not? Or is there a way for it to kind of roll over? If we didn't spend 20 hours, we could spend the hours that, you know, we didn't spend on this particular item?
Yes. So the short answer to your question is yes. So if we don't use 20 hours in a month, they'll roll them over to the next month for us.
Okay, cool.
We have not been in that situation recently.
Yep.
They've been working pretty hard for us.
Well, I'm sure they make sure they get the 20 hours a month.
They do, for sure.
All right, I second the motion to add additional 20 hours to CPS for the discrimination inquiry.
Ray?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Patrick?
Yes.
Thank you. I will let them know. Can you let them know that tomorrow?
Yes, I will speak to Deanna tomorrow.
And can you ask them to invoice that separately so that it shows up as a separate item?
Yep, absolutely.
Just so we can book it as a separate thing.
Mm-hmm. Quick question.
Yes.
In the budget for this year, we had a number for CPS. Did we pad that for the possibility of additional hours?
I did not. So I set that number basically for their contracted hours. So this is what I was explaining earlier. There's a couple of items that we haven't done, which is the organizational review and some compliance training that we're going to have to find the money for and rebudget and modify that budget amount. I did pad the legal fees section. So there was $5,000 that I put into there, which basically this kind of comes under. So I would take it out of that part of the budget for this.
Okay.
It's one of those things that legally we are required to do once we're informed of it. So it sort of falls into that camp.
Okay,
any other questions on that one? Okay. This week I received and I passed it on to you all, a retaliation complaint from an employee. That needs to be investigated again. It's a legal requirement that we undertake an inquiry into that complaint. We have basically two options, which is a two-member board committee to do it, or we can also pass that to CPS to do. I would certainly rather CPS did it based on the nature of the complaint without getting into it. Any other thoughts?
I think that's the safest route to go.
Sorry, say that again.
I think that I think it's the safest route to go because they have the experience of how to handle it. And I think it takes the board out of that. Taking the board out of that process is a better way to go. And then after they have actually assessed the situation, then we can make a decision based on their evidence. So I think that makes us a little bit, gives us a little bit more credibility with what they bring forth to the board and we decide on.
I agree. It puts it in a neutral corner.
Yeah.
Good point, Ray.
Okay, so I'll make the motion that we pass their complaint to CPS to investigate. I suspect that they will come back and, well, they'll do their initial inquiry and they'll come back and say either they do or don't need more time in order to investigate this. So I'd anticipate they will need some more time to gather everything together. But I make the motion that we pass the retaliation complaint to CPS for further inquiry.
I second that.
Ray?
Yes.
Henry?
Aye.
And Patrick?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to this kind of old business, but it's become new business. So if you remember, last year the board committed to working towards the 16 firefighter initiatives and the Everyone Goes Home initiative. That kind of got lost a little bit in the end of the year with everything that happened, and then all the work we had to do with budget and end of year statutory requirements. I'd like to not necessarily make the motion, but push forward the idea that we start looking into this and initiate a working party, certainly consisting of a board member, either one or all of the shift captains, and then one or two volunteer officers, just to look into this to see the work that we're going to have to do, what it involves, and what direction is potentially going to take us. So that's really my thoughts on that. Probably really looking for volunteers on that one. any board comments on that?
So the definition of the working party that you put forth was just an example, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
As in, you mean sort of one board member, shift officers?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think that would make sense because certainly board member, chief, and the shift officers are going to be the ones who really drive this. I'd like to involve volunteers because they can also drive this from below as well. And I think that's kind of important. Mm-hmm. They have involvement in anything that we're trying to do to, you know, change the direction of the department for the good.
And Ian, just looking ahead under future business, this may help develop department goals and obviously kind of set a direction for some of those goals.
Yes, and I thought that too. Certainly out of I think the initial aim of the working party would be to look at the 16 initiatives, understand them, and then come up with, okay, this year we can probably do two of these because it's unlikely we'll get all 16 done in one year. I don't think anybody gets that done. But yes, like you say, that will then drive some goals, and from the goals we can drive some metrics. So is anybody on the board interested in working with this and moving forward with this, other than me?
You know, I don't know if I have experience to be able to, you know, help with driving, you know, goals and metrics for the department and, you know, these more firefighter-esque kind of, you know, activities. So I'm probably not the best person to work on something like this.
Okay. I'm not volunteering you when I say this, by the way, but you might bring a different perspective to the group as a non-firefighter, just as a
candidate. What time of day would this activity take place?
My guess would be it would be an evening or a weekend. And I would say kind of like I would put time limits on it if I was on this party today, like 2 hours or one evening, and just start working through it. The initial phase is going to the Everyone Goes Home website, and that's got all the documents on it. It starts laying out what you need to do. And then some outreach to the local evangelists to get their help, because they'll actually be able to give you some really good insight into what you need to do and how you can achieve things. There's there's resources out there to fill the gaps in knowledge, because none of us, I don't think, really have the knowledge. And truly none of us, not just the board, have the knowledge to get through all of these without some kind of external input. So.
And maybe a different way to look at it, Ian, instead of having a board member on there, that would almost be like having a city council member sit in one of our staff meetings at the fire department and having them work through our accreditation with us. What if, as a board, we look at the 16 initiatives and we kind of pare it down to what we feel of those 16 we would like to give that working group? Hey, we want you to focus on these six. Tell us what you can do with these six initiatives and what you would prioritize in the first year, 2021, of these six, and in 2022, what you would take care of then, and how you plan on institutionalizing these initiatives and making it part of the fabric of this department. So basically it would be a board mandate saying, hey, here are the six things we find important, and now you have the latitude to figure out what you want to work on first, second, third, and allow the actual members to develop these initiatives.
Okay, I see what you mean. I think as long as there's a regular reporting mechanism back to the board about progress, that's my concern. That, you know, it's easy to say these things. They're really, there's a lot of work involved in doing this. And my concern is that without the board, I'm going to use the word driving it, that it could just kind of flounder. And it's going to be, I appreciate it's going to be still be difficult because of COVID, but I'd like to try and, there's a lot of background I think that we can get done. But I think your idea of possibly the board, yeah, picks out six and says, these are the things that we think are important. That would be good. I can provide the board. I'll send you, you can just look up the Everyone Goes Home initiative. Just Google it, go to their website. All the information's there. And then we can reconvene and discuss what we all think's important at the next meeting, if that works.
Yeah, I'd like to have some time to think about it.
Okay. Yeah, so just so you know, it's my intention to drive fairly hard on this year. So it's my personal goal is that we start making some movement on this. Mm-hmm. I think it would be good as a department to do, I think it will help us to try and work through, you know, some of the issues that we've had in the past. So, okay, if you're all good with having a look at the information over the next month, I will leave that there.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Ian, have you talked to some of the shift captains about this? What's their feel?
I spoke to them. I think I spoke to them. It was back last year. My feel is that they're behind this. So a lot of the concerns that we were dealing with last year were safety related and training related. And the 16 initiatives, the first couple of initiatives there are basically all around that. So all around the culture of your department, how it approaches things, how it approaches training, and how it approaches maintaining members of staff, things like that. And so the conversations that I've had all point towards general support for this. So, and if you remember, this was something that, I mean, not necessarily the 16 firefighter initiatives, but, you know, beginning of last year, I was trying to push the department into making operating guidelines and standardized trainings. And that all kind of fits into the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so like I said, I'll send out the info, have a read of, I'll try and pare it down a bit, because there's a lot of information there. And we can rediscuss, and we'll try and pick, like Patrick says, six that we think we can achieve or we'd like to work towards this year. Which, like he says, also then gives us some goals to work towards as well. Any other questions on that? Okay. Moving on. So in the email I sent you from Ryan clarifying the wildland deployment expense reimbursements, not necessarily reading between the lines, because it was fairly clear in there. We may have people who are going on deployment who are carrying expenses on credit cards that we're not necessarily reimbursing as fast as we could. So there's a couple of options for us on that one. From Ryan's description, expenses have never been, I wouldn't say questioned, but they've never been declined when we've put them in. And I assume that's as long as they're, you know, as long as they look reasonable. So it's not like we're out on a too huge of a limb if we reimburse them earlier than we currently do. And the other option is that we look into having department credit cards for people who want to go on deployment so that they can, so that they're not basically effectively funding the department while they're away. Did that make sense? And does anybody have comment?
We would have to set up a policy for what type of expenses can be charged to those cards, I would assume.
It would be the same, basically the same policy as whatever constitutes on a wildland fire. So It's effectively food, fuel, and accommodation, I think, are the big ones. I think one of the problems last year, and I can see this extending into this year, is that people on deployment were having to pay for accommodation instead of being in fire camp. And that was that became a fairly large burden for some people. I think the number was, it was like 40% of their reimbursement. And that's a big chunk of money, particularly if the claim gets stuck in the system and you run over whatever 59 days that you get on your credit card if you started at day one. But generally, it'd be about 30 days, and then you'd be looking at having to pay for it. Otherwise, you're incurring interest, and we can't refund the interest.
Mm-hmm. And then
those credit cards, do they have to be credit cards, or could they be debit cards with a certain limit on it? I'm a little bit reluctant of handing company credit cards out to, I suppose non-employees, volunteers, non-paid staff. But I also see the financial consequence that they're carrying, you know, being out there and paying for their expenses themselves. So I was wondering if, rather than a credit card, is there a debit card option?
There may be, but as a debit card option hits our bank account, and then we don't necessarily know it's coming. Although it would be smaller amounts, so it'd be manageable. I mean, the other option is that we make a policy for reimbursing expenses immediately, rather than the wait. So basically, instead of it waiting until it's been approved by the state, we'll just reimburse the expenses. And then if there's a problem with that, then there's the we can change the amount that we reimburse for the labor part of the deployment. That makes sense.
I would be most comfortable with that approach, just to have these volunteers or the people that are out there on deployment to submit their expenses other than the labor, but submit their other expenses, incidentals, to the department, and we can reimburse them ASAP without delay.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea.
I agree. But we also need to make it clear that the federal government reimburses, you know, they have caps on the reimbursement depending on your region that you're in, and they need to be made clear that if they're staying in a hotel, they need to meet the rate that the Forest Service agrees to pay for rooms at. And so I don't know if that's ever been explained. And then
I believe everybody's clear on that. And I think it gets explained, or that gets explained when you are pulled onto the fire. You obviously, Patrick, probably know better than I do. But yes, I mean, obviously, no staying at the, and I can't even think of a wildly expensive hotel anywhere at the moment, but yeah. And they're going to stay at the Mondrian in Los Angeles.
Right.
With a California fire at $700 a night.
Yeah. So just, you know, that's what we need to make clear, that's what we reimburse up to, is what we can bill back to the state, and then so on and so forth, state to the feds.
That makes sense. Yeah. Because even then, we're still ahead of where that would be. So that would be basically, as soon as they file them and they're processed, we could say, okay, that's good. We're happy to file this, and we're sure this will go through. So, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And then obviously they need to provide all their receipts. And do we have any kind of worksheet that we want receipts attached to?
I believe they already do. They already do all of that, because we have to supply all of that information anyway. So, so yes.
So who in the department would you say, if you know this, the answer to this question, is the most familiar with the entire process of submitting invoices, getting reimbursements, you know, somebody that could answer the question, in the history of us doing this, how many have been rejected by the state?
So that would be Ryan. And in his email, he said none have ever been rejected.
Okay,
cool. So basically he vets them before he even puts them in. And I'm pretty sure that if he doesn't think it will get reimbursed, he doesn't put it in, because it just makes more work.
Right.
He has to go and then resupply it if they reject it.
So according to the process of paying those expenses ASAP and not waiting for the state to reimburse, we would have that filter, which would be the experienced person looking at those expenses and making the judgment call.
Correct.
Saying, yeah, okay, good, okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is really just an option. And like I said, it's just an option to make sure that we're not got people hanging on or paying their credit cards.
Yeah.
And really effectively funding the department or the fire they're on. So.
But we also that we're using our taxpayer dollars that we're in charge of to do this.
We are.
We have to be smart.
Say again, Ray. So, Ray, can you make your comment again? You got cut off.
I said we have to be smart about it.
Yes. And I think that's to Patrick's point of, and Todd's point of ensuring that the expenses meet the correct guidelines before we reimburse them. So it's like what we do now. So at the moment we'd reimburse 85%, but we'd do that once the state had checked our filing and agreed to pay. So all what we're basically doing is moving that, or what I would like to do is move that further up the chain just so we haven't got people hanging out there. So it's only for expenses. This is not for any of their labor charge. That still waits until until we know we're going to get reimbursed by the state. So we're effectively acting as a buffer between the state and our firefighters to make sure that our firefighters aren't out of pocket.
Well, back in my day, no one got paid until the department was paid.
Right.
I think the accounting is better than what it was back then, too. There was no hotels. It was all fire camps.
Yeah. And
times have changed. And things have gotten more drastic in the past 10, 15 years than they were 30 years ago.
Yeah, I believe...
Well, we never sent anybody out of county. We had a few requests for other deployments that never panned out, but primarily our deployments were in county.
Yeah, so we definitely have two people that go out of county, out of state.
Right.
And it's basically those two people who've sort of generated this question about whether we want to do this or can do this.
Hey, Ian, do you know, top of your head, what that number would have been for 2020 that the department would have paid out early based on, those receipts, those submittals?
I don't. So in Ryan's email, he says the expenses tended to be about 30%.
Right.
But that only really affected two or three people. And we had a lot of people out on the smaller fires. The more local fires at Calward and Left Hand that didn't generate any expenses. So it's hard to say as an average of the whole number what that was. We can find out though, for sure.
I mean, in most cases,
are we able to ask these firefighters before they go on deployment what they think those reimbursables are going to be?
I guess that's what I was going to say, Henry, is, typically if they're driving, they're going to have fuel reimbursement expenses. while they're en route. So let's say somebody's going to Utah for a fire, or even further, let's give them a night travel. So they're going to have their fuel expense out to the fire, and then they're going to have fire pays for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then they cap that rate, what you can spend total for meals for the day. And then depending on the region you're going to, they have a cap on hotel or lodging expenses for the evening. COVID certainly put a big kind of threw everybody a curveball in, and also the having the fires in Colorado as late as they were this year, you know, putting guys on the ground at night, you know, and at 28 degrees, and also having fire camps that were dispersed, they were more willing to put people up in hotel rooms where, you know, years prior to this year, they would not pay for hotel rooms because you were expected to stay in the fire camp once you're on scene. So, you know, maybe a hotel on either side. So a hotel night traveling to the hotel night, coming back from the fire, fuel expenses, and then food expenses on your way to and from the fire. But really, once you're during a normal year outside of COVID, once you're on that fire, you still stay in fire camp. They feed you. Depending on the fire, you may have to put fuel in your own vehicle. They may have fuel on site. So that's still the variable.
But that should not be 30% of your overall deployment cost, though, right? I mean, that's a small fraction.
And like I said, yeah, I think this year, if we were using those numbers this year and it was 30%, I think a lot of it has to do with the fire saying, look, we don't want people hanging around in base camp close to one another, so go find hotel rooms. But generally, no, I agree with you, Henry. 30% seems a little high to me. I know I can take a crew out with an engine and have topping off a 65-gallon diesel tank driving to California and back with hotels. I would say probably no more than about $1,500 to $2,000 worth of credit card receipts, and that would include my room and rooms for three other firefighters, each with their own room.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a big...
But certainly, yeah, 2020 was different from most years, obviously, for various reasons.
And I expect 21 to be probably similar. I guess we'll see how that works out.
But I guess, you know, my point is that whomever's going out needs to be perfectly clear on what our reimbursement rates are, and that we aren't going to exceed what we can actually bill the federal government for reimbursable expenses. So, and those rates do change based on, you know, the region you're going to.
Okay. Well, one thing that clearly comes out of this is we don't have an actual policy in place for this. This was, certainly as a new board member, this is a policy that we inherited. I'd assumed that there was some clarity in how we did that. It doesn't seem to be. So I think we probably need to make some clarity both on the reimbursement, which we discussed last month, and also on the expense reimbursement. So, I'm taking that as there needs to be some work done on this. So I will talk to the chief and we will circle back on this.
Chief's back, by the way.
Oh, hello, chief.
Sorry.
That's good. Did you get any of that?
Yeah, we got some work to do.
That's the bit you got. Okay.
Yeah, so I got it.
There's some other work we've got to do as well. But
yeah. Okay. No, I came in on the wildland deployment expense discussion. So
okay. That's... All right. Let's leave it. You and I talk about that and figure out a policy that we can lay out that makes sense, especially for the board.
OK. Copy. Pat, I may need to lean on Pat a little bit just to kind of pattern us after stuff that's working, but you know that.
That's right. Happy for you to lean on.
Yeah, you know, and Ian, I pulled up that wildland ledger that Kathy had sent to us and just kind of summed the what looks like expenses that were paid out. It comes to like $23,000, something like that. Okay. But it needs a closer look. Oh.
That would be wages as well. Look.
No, it's not. It's just based on what I'm looking at.
We build a lot for wildland this year. We had people out on a lot.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, this was a crazy, unordinary year.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
I don't see this year go the same way, for sure. Okay. I'll bring that back to you. We talked about paid sick leave adoption previously. And department goals and metrics, and that's covered in the 16 firefighter initiatives. Chief, one thing you did miss was I'm keen that we start moving towards the 16 firefighter initiatives. I wanted to look at setting up a working party for that. We changed the plan on that a little bit. The board are going to look at the initiatives and so basically pick six that we think we should work towards, and then we can narrow that down. But I'd like to see a sort of a working party at least involving you and the shift officers and volunteer officers about what they'd like to work towards. So that we start bringing ourselves towards the fulfilling the 16 initiatives as we can.
Okay, Ian, I don't know that I've seen any of the initiatives, so if you can forward that stuff to me, that'd be great.
It's if you just Google everyone goes home, I think it's actually everyonegoeshome.org, you don't even need to Google it.
Okay, I got it.
All on there, but there's a lot of information. And I can talk to you about it as well because I had a look at it last year. But I think it would be good for the department to start moving in that direction.
Okay.
I think it would help to not necessarily solve some of our problems, but it would at least approach some of our problems that we have in
town. Okay.
So it's a way forward. On that note, are there any further comments from the board? Any other business?
I just want to make a statement publicly that I think that we should recognize Kathy's work over the past year. She's done a very good job, I'd have to say. Very appreciative of all the work she does, and she responds to our special requests for more information promptly. And so just like to give her a shout out that she's done a very good job.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I'd just like to add to that. I'd like to thank Kathy for being so patient and explaining things sometimes multiple times until we understood.
That's right.
Yes, indeed.
I know what hot springs she likes to go to, just in case the board would be interested in, you know, giving her a bonus or such.
Yeah, the board will consider. I'll bring her back in February, maybe. I'll ask Kathy and see if we can afford it. What do you reckon?
See what she can carve out of the budget.
Mm-hmm. Sure, we shouldn't be saying things like that. Anyway. Moving on swiftly, before we get ourselves into, no pun intended, hot water. Any other board comments? Okay. I'm going to close out the meeting. Are there any public comments that anybody would like to make? Any members of the public would like to make? I will take that as a no. And then, because I didn't look it up in time, I'm just going to pause for a second. We have no special executive session, so no conclusions. And our next meeting day appears to be February the 3rd at 7 p.m. Again, that'll be a Zoom meeting unless something drastically changes in the world. On that note, I'd like to make the motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Patrick? Sorry, you broke up. Todd?
Yes.
And Henry?
Aye.
Thank you, gentlemen, for this evening. Thank you, Chief. Well, I wasn't including you in gentlemen. We'll adjourn the meeting at 2026.
Good night.
Thank you, guys. Happy New Year.
Good night, everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year to you, too. Bye.
We'll meet soon.
Thanks. Bye.